Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Midweek Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at some interesting developments in international education news, and we hope you stay with us for those over the next half hour. I want to send a special shout out to those of you who are listening in on the podcast, for those who have subscribed over the last few months. We are now over 76 episodes into the Midweek Roundup and going strong. So we appreciate you being a part of the show each week, whether you're working out, taking a walk during lunch, or listening while you work. So we appreciate you being a part of the Roundup, and you make this a very special place, depth to those here on the Roundup. For that information, if you'd like a copy of the Roundup or subscribe to it, I put the copy of the link to the most recent edition from this past Monday in the comments section. So we ask you to click on that link, go to the subscribe section, and add yourself to the Roundup or to the e-newsletter subscription. And that's called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's Social Media International Ed News. So, what we're going to be talking about today, there are three basic topics that will be profiled today. We'll talk about the fallout from the coronavirus epidemic. We'll look at the recent reports out of from the Council of Graduate Schools on international graduate enrollments and the potential bright spots that are appearing there. And then we'll wrap up with a look at a recent decision on unlawful presence and what that might mean for current international students that are studying here in the States. Now, first up, let's look at coronavirus. There isn't a campus that hasn't been affected by this in the United States, certainly. But when we look at countries that have had, as I mentioned in the newsletter on Monday, probably the biggest significant impact on a country so far, other than China itself, on the higher ed scale, is Australia. This all happened. The epidemic, the virus, took off in December and January, and that was at a time when the Australian universities were on their summer breaks. So a greater majority of students were not around. In fact, well over half of the Chinese students that are studying in Australia are currently back home in China and have been unable to travel since the travel restrictions have been put in place around the world for people going to and coming from China. So we're looking at over 100,000 students, Chinese students, that are attending Australian universities that have been unable to return. And there's been some positive movements in that, which just is mind-boggling to think of, that it would come to this, but China's famous for their great firewall of China and the limits on access to outside content for people in that country. But as a result of the scandal, of this epidemic that's impacted over 100,000 of its Chinese citizens that are studying overseas, we're looking at a significant impact on that group, and that could cause some significant challenges. But China has relaxed, apparently, its internet restrictions to allow Chinese students who are not able to leave China yet, allowing them to access their course materials online, to view any of the courses that are going to be taught online, as well as in person. So that's a real benefit for those students that at least they have that. This is an epidemic that is having a far greater economic impact and will continue to have a greater economic impact than, say, for example, what happened with SARS back in the early 2000s. That was China's global economic reach wasn't as significant as it is today. There's much more global commerce, obviously, going in and out of China now than it was 15, 20 years ago. So what this means is for countries like Australia that have become, I think I saw one graphic that said that 38% of their international students are from China currently, and half of those being are currently unable to return for studies. That's a significant impact. So what's that? What the longer term impacts of this going to be? The Pine News story has had some insights into this, and what really makes us think about the significance of how two things that kind of pop out when we look at Australia's responses here. We see obviously an over-reliance on China as a destination, as a source country for students at their higher ed institutions. And we also see in the language that's used how much universities treat their international students as a business. And you hear this in particular from the chief executive of the Group of Eight in Australia. That's the kind of Australia's leading research intensive universities. Those eight universities alone account for 63% of enrollments from Chinese nationals. So eight universities accounting for 63% of Chinese nationals that are studying in Australia. And that they're talking about in the next step or next sentence, given the Group of Eight's exposure, it can be deducted that most of these students who are stranded are ours. This is a potentially a financial hit estimated by S&P Global at up to Australian $3 billion for all the affected universities. So this is obviously huge for the way Australia is taking this. Not only obviously this human element of the students not able to return, but the financial impact that this is having on and will continue to have on their universities until something happens to change it. Chris, Fred, Rena, thanks for joining today. Glad you're with us for the roundup, and hope you're all well. With kind of a U.S. focus on this, you look at what's happened with U.S. higher education, and we know China, obviously, they are sending globally over 680,000 students as of 2018. 680,000 Chinese students were studying outside of China, and we know that in the United States, we have over 300,000 of those of our million plus international students are currently from China. Timing for Chinese students that might have been home over the Christmas break for us, the winter holidays here, obviously not as significant a number with particularly the undergraduate level. Most students aren't going home. The greater majority of students aren't going home, but there are some that have been kind of stuck, particularly those that were starting their studies later in January after the travel restrictions were put in place by many airlines and nations were put in place to restrict travel to and from China. So there have been some reports of that, but on a global scale, it's much greater outside the United States than it is in. But where U.S. has felt a lot of the impact has been with study abroad programs and any short-term programs for the spring term that were impacted, or year-long programs. Students were brought home or from those part of the evacuations. And when you think about it, Wuhan is in central eastern China. Most cities in China are ones that there's literally dozens to hundreds of Chinese cities that have over a million people that most U.S. folks have never heard of before. Wuhan's probably one of those, but it's a multi-million person city that has been on lockdown. That whole province, Hubei province, has been on lockdown since. There are schools have shut down throughout China and other surrounding countries, Vietnam, Hong Kong. Others have had classes canceled, are moving to virtual studies, whatever is available to them. But we look at the impact in the United States. We've just seen a report this morning that an SAT has been for March has been canceled in China or Hong Kong. I'm not quite sure which, but there's going to be a ripple effect certainly for the next few months. There are conferences and events that have been canceled that were happening in China. There's international ACAC had to cancel a spring spring workshop there just in the last couple of days. So there's wide-ranging impacts. There's concern, though. How long will this last? Is this going to impact fall enrollments? Certainly, application deadlines for many universities were already in process. So there's hope, at least, that for first-time undergraduate and graduate students, perhaps that are still able to apply, maybe not travel yet, obviously, until the summer. Yeah, best case scenario when the travel restrictions are lifted. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on what happens with that. I've shared with you both stories in the comments section on the Facebook page, first from the Pi News and also from Inside Higher Ed. That will kind of give you a focus on what's happening on the ground, both in Australia and some of the stories coming out of the United States. But I also want to point to what's happening in China, and agents in particular in China that are predicting a drop in Chinese students studying abroad. Like, we didn't already know that was happening, but the coronavirus outbreak is likely to enhance that decline, which is we'll see if that actually happens or not. But BOSA, the Beijing Overseas Study Service Association, is an association for agents across China that recruits students for universities abroad. They are predicting their first snapshot is that that roughly two-thirds of Chinese students recruited abroad go through agents. That they're saying it's impacting Chinese international education sector significantly with the COVID-19 virus. Coronavirus, as it's now known, that it's affecting college applications, visa applications, and in-country exit and entry. So, and they say that what's going to be worst hit are going to be the summer programs are going to be any summer programs of Chinese students going overseas will be particularly hard hit. 83% is believe of these BOSA agents believe that those short-term programs are going to suffer most. So we'll see how the impacts of COVID-19 will impact longer term through to the fall. So that's the real challenge is now we've got over 2,000 people who have died in the last couple of months from COVID-19. And this is something that we're going to be going to really be interesting to see how long of a term impact this is going to have. We look at what's happening. The Ministry of Education has announced that English proficiency exams for Chinese students to apply to foreign universities would be canceled nationwide in February. That's already happened for IELTS and TOEFL. GRE and GMAT have been canceled nationwide. Ministry of Education was looking at developments in the epidemic to decide whether the Gaokao is even going to be taking place in June. So this is obviously a huge ripple effect of this epidemic. When it's going to Ministry of Education is now looking at the Gaokao, which is a June exam, whether or not that's allowed to happen as is in the early part of June. So the travel restrictions are affecting applications, particularly for visas. There was a story in the Pi News article that I've already posted that shared that there was actually for Australia, no new visas for students had been issued since December. So that's a real challenge in terms of how that's impacting, obviously, Southern Hemisphere colleges that are starting up their classes this month and early next. So we'll be keeping our eye on that one for you here, and we'll certainly see how that develops. Now, let's shift gears to a slightly more positive story. We've got the first-time increases in international enrollments, as reported by the new Council of Graduate Schools survey, CGS. They have reported moderate increases here. So in international graduate students, both in applications and enrollments for the 2019 cycle. So the increase by 4% in fall 2019 compared to fall 2018. And that is that's enrollments. And applications for prospective graduate students this year increased 3%. So There will be a lot of variation by from depending on where in the world and such. The survey saw that the increases were coming, and that's a particularly positive sign for international educators here in the United States. And we've been kind of battered by bad news for the last 3 years as it impacts international student enrollments. And the actual breakdown of the data is in the Council of Graduate Schools report, and I put the link to that as well in the comments section. And it does give some interesting insight, actually, when you look at some of the key markets. Obviously, China and India are by far the largest. For India is actually a larger market for master's degree students than China, as I reported a couple of weeks ago with the latest CVIS by the Numbers report and the information I was able to garner from it. But China, in between 2018 and 2019, the number of grad applications and first-time graduate enrollments increased by 3% each, and that's a positive sign. The undergrad numbers have been going down, but graduate numbers are from this Council of Graduate Schools report, looks to be rebounding, so that's encouraging. India, for the first time in 3 years, they have seen either flat or slightly increased. First-time enrollments increased by 1% for Indian nationals, and no change in the number of applicants from Indian nationals, but enrollments did increase from India, 1%. When you're talking India and China, 1% and 2% can mean substantial numbers, given that India has over 200,000 students studying in the U.S., China over 300,000. So we're looking, obviously, at significant individual numbers, if not percentage increases yet from those two countries. Ironically, Iran has seen substantial increases, a modest increase, 2% from applications from Iranian nationals. But enrollments, as we've seen from the CVIS by the Numbers, Open Doors, have been declining at a rate of 7% for new graduates. And that's where most all Iranians that come to the United States or hope to come to the United States are looking at graduate programs and even primarily doctorate in that fact. So a CGS report does give some really fascinating details, a couple of which you may just want to make a note of, that in the one-year change numbers, where the greatest percentage growth was applicants from Mexico, had a 4% growth in applications and a 10% growth in enrollments. So from Mexico, international graduate enrollments were increased substantially. The next largest area or region that it saw significant increases, and certainly the largest increase in applications, was sub-Saharan Africa, 11% increase in master's and doctoral level applicants to U.S. universities, and incredibly, a 22% increase in first-time enrollments from students from sub-Saharan Africa. So really encouraged by that. And this may have something to do with kind of theories that have been thrown around. Certainly, one that I've heard universities have success with it on the undergraduate side, but certainly there's no reason why it can't apply on the graduate side as well. In terms of interest, that students that are coming from countries that have had a tradition of authoritarian rulers are less fazed by the political rhetoric that flows around our current administration regarding immigration and all these negative stereotypes that get thrown out from the current administration. So it's interesting to see that sub-Saharan Africa and Mexico are seeing two biggest targets of the current administration's rhetoric in terms of their views on immigration and such. They are leading the way when it comes to immigrants or students coming for graduate studies from Mexico and sub-Saharan Africa. So really encouraged to see those numbers, and that's something that I think maybe will be the little bit of a light of hope at the end of a tunnel, perhaps, of darkness that we've been in the last few years. And we'll certainly keep our eye on that one as well. A lot of these increases this coming year may be tempered or offset by what's happening with the coronavirus, and we don't know for sure yet how that'll play out come fall enrollments. It'll be this time next year before we see the real impact on on that if DHS does another CVIS by the numbers report, or and if this CGS report comes out this time next year. So it'll be a while before we really feel and see some of the real hard number impacts on enrollments. But it's certainly, when it comes to China, we're probably going to see some drop off if it relates to graduate enrollment. So we'll certainly keep our fingers crossed for that one, and hopefully the situation resolves itself enough in the coming weeks to allow for travel to resume and other pieces of the puzzle that affect international enrollments to begin flowing again. And that's something we'll certainly keep you posted on. Now, the final story of the day relates to kind of a long-running saga that comes out of August 2018 USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Service memo that sought to change how unlawful presence days are counted following a violation of FM or J non-immigrant status. We're getting real technical here, and unless you're a DSO or a RO at your campus, this may be a little bit too much, but it's just, this was seen at the time as another move by the administration to limit and curtail international students looking to enroll, and also affecting the current international students that are studying here. So the initial memo back in 2018 sought to impact students who have minor violations of status in the course of their applications or their continued status in the country, that would be something like not having updated your address, because you have to keep your address within 10 days. You have to update your address within CVIS. You have to any change of status, change of programs, or change of address, or change of employers if you're on OPT or such. Those all have to be registered by students in CVIS, so within a certain number of days. What this was seen as, and what the end effect was going to be, is students that would had accrued over 180 days of being after a violation would have occurred, that they would then have a ban placed on them, that they'd be forced to leave the country and not be able to return for 5 or 10 years, depending on the length of during the length of their violation. Now, again, it was something could be something very simple. It could be something much more major. But for those simple offenses, they were classified the same as somebody who had worked illegally, or when they accrue days of unlawful presence, that they could have. I'm sorry, I said 5 or 10 year ban. It would either be a 3 to 10 year ban. That it would be individuals who accrue more than 180 days, so 6 months roughly, of unlawful presence after a violation, whether they knew they were in violation or not. The clock starts when their status becomes, when they are no longer meeting the criteria for their status, that they may be subject to a 3 or 10 year ban to admissions, depending on how much unlawful presence they accrued before they left. So if they've accrued more than 1 year of unlawful presence from the date of whenever that violation occurred, whether in a single stay or multiple stays, they would then be rendered permanently inadmissible. Again, more than 1 year of unlawful presence. And those, if you do get that ban placed on you, would not be able to apply for a visa, admission to the United States, or adjustment of status to permanent residence, unless they applied for a waiver, which is going to be impossible to get. So this is something that was seen at the time when this first came out in August 2018 as a real threat long term to the attractiveness of the United States, and because there was such gray area and such an uncertainty as to what was going to be covered in this unlawful presence period, what would when does the clock start, who's responsible for what, and it was really impacting anyone who's been working with Cibus knows the challenges with that system, but certainly with notifications and such, having to be on top of these kinds of things, students having the responsibility to be on top of these things more than they already are, was a reality that was pushing a lot of international student advisors getting very nervous about what this would mean for their students. So what the injunction that was placed on this when the initial memo was released in August 2018, the USCIS asked for feedback until May. So that's the memo that was put out did reflect what would happen that in August 2018. So in October, shortly after that memo came out, a group of universities filed a suit against USCIS to declare that unlawful and fake, to declare the act unlawful or the memo unlawful and enjoin enforcement of the application of the memo, so to prevent it, basically. So what happened was, on February 6th, U.S. District Court issued a permanent nationwide injunction blocking that memo that sought to implement this unlawful presence criteria, new interpretation of the unlawful presence law or memo. And that was going back to a May 2019 memo that kind of outlined what the new criteria was 11 years ago. So we're talking significant updating of it. So the 2009 policy is now in place. The link that I put in the comments section is from NAFSA, and they've done a great job summarizing these various things. They always do that when the legal issues, because they are on the Hill and advocating for student rights, international student rights on these kinds of issues all the time. So kudos to NAFSA for putting together this to help us understand, international educators understand, who aren't knee-deep in the middle of all the immigration regulations as they impact their students as much as advisors are currently. So kudos to them, NAFSA, for that, and hopefully this permanent injunction does give some breathing space to not saying that the administration is not going to come back with a different process or way of going about this new their attempts to change the unlawful presence regulations, but certainly we'll certainly keep abreast of it and let you know what's happening on that front. So that's all we have for today. I want to give again a big shout out to the folks listening on the podcast. When you subscribe, that really helps me. Understand that people are out there listening, and those that are coming and watching live, really appreciate you being a part of the show, and look forward to hearing from you in further discussions down the road. So until next time, have a wonderful week.